Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible.
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Listen!
Hello and welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's Nintendo podcast. I'm your host, Casey DeFritis, and this week's special E3 edition of NVC is a little different. For the first half, we have our Nintendo Direct reaction show with Zach Ryan, Brian Altano, Joe Screbbles, and myself talking about the biggest Nintendo announcements and info we got from the Nintendo Direct and the 3-hour Treehouse presentation. Then stick around for Tom Mark's interview with Nintendo's Bill Trennan and Nate Bildorf, where they discuss time travel in Zelda and the end of Samus' story. Let's get it started.
Hello and welcome to IGN's E3 2021 Nintendo Direct reaction show. I'm your host, Brian Altano. We just saw a Nintendo Direct plus this Treehouse presentation, all that fun stuff. Here to unpack it are my friends, Casey DeFritis, Zach Ryan, Joe Screbbles. What else can we say? Let's get right into it. Breath of the Wild 2. We got new stuff for Breath of the Wild 2. I thought we weren't going to. I thought this show was starting with a troll, but I think we're good.
It definitely started with a troll. That was cruel and unusual that they would open with a shot of Ganondorf because we thought we were going to get right into it.
I don't want to boast, but I knew immediately that that was a reference to that terrible Tekken throwing off a cliff scene. So
wow,
being trolled by it.
And then we got it for all the characters.
It's the best gift there is.
Okay, so I really want to talk about Breath of the Wild 2. I think we expected to see it today, but I don't think we expected to see this much. This gave me chills. It made me tear up a little bit. I'm a grown man. I'm not afraid to admit that. I'm confident. And I will say there's so much to unpack here. We got all these new mechanics, new locations, new weapons and stuff like that. Zach, I want to start with you because you know, Twitter's already going crazy here with different theories. This feels like it's tying in a bunch of different Zelda games, potentially.
Yeah. I want to unpack something that you just said. You said we didn't expect to see this much. That trailer's only a minute and 38 seconds long, right?
I know, but it's
part of the last part of that is just a shot of the castle raising and the date. Right? It's supposedly coming next year, and they said that they went out of their way to say that they're aiming for 2022, which means, you know, maybe not. We'll see. But I think the thing that's most interesting is all the theories that are flying around right now about, is it set across multiple timelines? Are you playing different characters? How does it tie into these other Zelda games? Because there's a lot of things that are pointing towards Skyward Sword. Obviously, the idea that you're playing in the islands above Hyrule, which, as we know, all the lands above Hyrule were featured as the Skyloft in Skyward Sword. We are getting a Skyward Sword remastered version right here pretty shortly, which is like, oh, should you brush up on your Skyward Sword lore as you get ready for Breath of the Wild 2? Because maybe they're tied closer together. We see a lot of stuff from that hints at potential ties to Twilight Princess. You know, Link's cybernetic looking arm here looks a lot like the stuff that we saw from Twilight Princess. Right. But I think it's also important to remember that the original Breath of the Wild had a ton of other references to older Zelda games, the Koroks, you know, stuff tied to Majora's Mask, different locations that were kind of burned out or knocked down in across Hyrule. So this could be like, obviously it's all pure speculation, and maybe this stuff that's tying in is just like a nice wink and a nod, but maybe it does have bigger ramifications on the story. Obviously we're just going to have to wait and see what that means.
It did feel weird that we got Skyward Sword announced for Switch when there are a lot more obvious Zelda games, but maybe things are starting to connect now with all of this. Casey, one thing that I find really peculiar about this trailer is that we never really see Link's face. And now there are tons of theories about what that means. Could we be looking at like a multiple Link scenario? We've seen many Links in the past before with Four Swords Adventures. That's always a more sort of campy approach. And obviously we saw Zelda in the original teaser for this game. What's going on with the playable character in this game?
Yeah, I noticed that too, that you never see Link's face in any of the gameplay in this, which really weirded me out. But it looks like they're very distinctively two different characters. There is one Link, we assume, in the sky, and another Link on the ground. Not only is their hairstyle different, but it looks like the one with the long hair that is up in the sky primarily is the one with the weird arm. However, we do see the one on the ground have some attachments on the left arm, but the left arm doesn't seem deformed in any way, but he does use a flamethrower attachment, which is pretty cool. But there are a lot of theories going around that the Link on the ground is actually just a placeholder. And maybe they're just gonna like, just kidding, it's been Zelda the whole time. I don't know if that's actually gonna happen or not. But it looks like they're very distinctively two Links. And as Zach was saying, are these two Links across two different time periods? And I think one of the things that hints to that is that the Link in the sky, their shoes look pretty primitive compared to the boots and equipment that the Link that we know from Breath of the Wild. I have so many questions. There is so much Treehouse, and I rewatched this trailer like 12 times because I was so interested in everything that goes on.
Joe, what was something that really stuck out for you in this trailer? Were you flipping out watching this like the rest of us, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like this is all I could have hoped for. Like you say, it's a minute and a half just full of things to speculate on. And so what arm is the thing that got me, but specifically the fact that it seems to presage the idea that this isn't just a sequel to Breath of the Wild that's going to use the same mechanics in a new place, in a new setting with a new story. Like, we see new abilities in there. We see new weapons. You know, you're obviously expecting a certain amount of that stuff, but I think it's easy to forget now that it's, 4 years later, and a lot of people think it's the best game ever made, that Breath of the Wild did loads of stuff that we weren't expecting, and it encouraged you to with its world and be creative. And there are moments in this, you know, we see the new version of the stasis power. We see we've got new ways to mess with stuff. That's what's really exciting to me in this.
Yeah, I'm wondering, and let's just check the pulse on this one. Do you all think that breakable weapons will return? I feel like that was such a core part of the last game. It seemed like people came around to it, you know, like it was an issue early on in the game when your weapons are breaking constantly. Back into the game doesn't seem like too much of a problem. Most people kind of liked it. So what do you think about this one?
I don't know. I'm of two minds. I think that the weapon durability thing was like a major sticking point for a lot of people. Like a lot of people's issues with Breath of the Wild come directly from the idea that like, oh, the weapon durability is bad. I personally really liked it because I thought it really enforced the idea that you have to switch up weapons. You have to try different fighting styles. You have to try all these different things. And that's why they're showering you with these weapons constantly, right? So I would like to see it make a return. Maybe that durability could be increased so that stuff isn't breaking as often for folks mm-hmm. that didn't dig it in the first place. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a core tenet to what Breath of the Wild is as a new, you know, entry in the Zelda series. So I'd like to see it stick around.
Yeah, I actually wonder if some of the arm mechanic stuff could maybe potentially be a standby weapon that you do have in case of emergency when all your weapons break. That's a good way of sort of meeting fans in the middle of going, hey, we kept the weapon breakability stuff, but also, you know, if everything goes south, you have this unshatterable firearm, Mega Man style, and you can do cool stuff with it.
I like that.
Yeah, how do you feel about like the weapon combat and stuff like that in this game, Joe? Do you think they're going to expand on this a lot? Maybe just dump in tons and tons more weapons, or where do you think this will go?
I guess to me, it looks more, and you know, who knows what they're leaving out of a trailer, but to me, it looks more like they're emphasizing the idea that you can do different things as Link innately. As you say, like that kind of backup set of stuff, you know, you have your bomb power and that kind of stuff. I could see that kind of thing being expanded. To me, like, I'm also a big fan of the weapon durability, and I think what they'd lose by getting rid of it, if they did, and you know, we're way into speculation now, is the idea that, you know, Breath of the Wild gave you so much. It really rewarded you at every turn. Like, you would go around a corner and find new stuff, and it felt like you were constantly being given things for looking around you. Right. And I think you would lose that if you were, you know, kind of paring back how many times you were finding things. So I think, like you say, I think there's a great midpoint there by going, look, here's an expanded arsenal of powers that you always have, and also all the other stuff that you can find around them. Wouldn't expect that to go too wild beyond that.
Casey, very quickly, we still haven't seen dungeons, and that's something that a lot of us are asking for. We did see the castle lift up in the air, which seems to me like the kind of awesome cutscene you would see before going into a dungeon in a Zelda game. But most of this still is kind of still above ground. Do you think we'll get dungeons in this game? Are there anything here leading you to think that we will?
I think even more so than the fall down into the depths, and I think might be reading into this a little bit, but that might suggest that we have to go down into a dungeon to rescue, I hope not rescue her. I'm kind of done rescuing people, but maybe we'll go down there, or maybe Zelda will be doing the dungeoneering while the two Links from different timelines are doing things above and in the sky.
Look at that. We've veered directly into like fan, we've made our own fan game at this uh-huh. point. This is great.
There you go.
Can I put an idea out there?
Yeah, real quick, let's hear it.
Oh yeah, what about if those islands up top, which are, you know, limited spaces, what if those are your dungeons? You know, you have the ground, you know, Hyrule Field to explore, but when you go up, that's your space to maneuver around.
I'm into that.
Yeah. A sort of like reverse dungeon upside down thing. That's great. I'm very into it. That would be new for Zelda. Well, we have tons more Nintendo to talk about in just a minute. But first, we will take a very, very short break. So take a deep breath. We will gather our thoughts because there's tons more Nintendo announcements to talk about. Today was awesome. IGN will return right after this. So don't go anywhere. Yeah. It's a Link quote. I'm Brian Altano along with Casey, Zach, and Joe. Hello, everyone.
Hello, hi. Brian.
Okay, hello. So in the pre-show, we talked about Metroid Prime 4. Still a logo, by the way. Mm-hmm. No additional updates there. But they did let us know that it's coming along. It's happening. Hasn't been canceled. But as a very, very awesome make good, we got the reveal of a brand new Metroid game, Metroid Dread, a Metroid title that has been 16 years in the works, canceled multiple times, a brand new 2D Metroid game out October 8th for Nintendo Switch. Zach, let's start with you. How are you feeling about this?
I mean, I really wanted to see Metroid Prime 4.
Yeah.
And the next best thing is a new 2D Metroid. Metroid Dread has been rumored and sort of secret for so long that it was absolutely astounding to see that name pop up on screen. And this game looks sick. Like, it really looks like a cool new take on a 2D Metroid game. I know we talked a lot during the Treehouse presentation about how this looks like kind of a survival horror thing. It's got a totally different vibe. It's doing a lot of different stuff for the Metroid series that I'm really, really interested in. And the fact that it's coming in October is amazing, man. Like, I hope that we see Metroid Prime 4 soon. But in lieu of that, this is the next best thing. I can't wait to play any new Metroid game. And it's coming from Mercury Steam, the team behind Samus Returns, which is a game that I thought was pretty good. And so hopefully they'll take some of those learnings and apply them here, and we can have another awesome Metroid game.
It would be super cool if they took that game and put it on Switch, by the way, because I also think a lot of people kind of slept on it. It came out towards the very end of the 3DS's life cycle. Mm-hmm. Casey, let's talk about this new robot, Emmy.
Emmy looks terrifying.
Yeah.
So if we were watching in the Treehouse demo, even the people who were playing on camera were being unnerved by Emmy. It seems like if it catches up to you, that's it, you're done. So Samus has a lot of different tools in her arsenal to be stealthy. So I think she can use camo that makes her turn invisible, or at least camouflage with the surroundings. And if you're standing still, Emmy can't hear you to come, and I think they use the word insta-kill you. So, but I also think you might be able to kill Emmy as well, but it might not be worth the struggle. And I think also some of the suit's survival mechanics, if you run out of energy, can then suck your life force to be powered instead. So there seems to be a lot of different risk and reward and management going on to try and stay away from this very scary robot, which is only in certain areas of this map that you'll be exploring as Samus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that we were talking about earlier is some of the, and Zach just touched on it too, some of the creature design is sort of very horror adjacent, or at least a lot deeper into the sort of horror aesthetic than you usually see from Metroid. Metroid obviously gets into, you know, some horror stuff. There are some, you know, ghastly, horrible, pussing, gigantic alien creatures. There's brains that land on your head and take all of whatever's inside you out of you. It's just horrible. Like, they're just monsters and they're disgusting. But in this game, like, they're going with some, like, very kind of like distinctly kind of like ugly 80s 90s horror creatures that I'm really, really into it. Joe, this is the 35th anniversary of the Metroid franchise. This is already more than I expected. I will say that my expectations for Samus's birthday party were extremely low. Do you think we're going to get more than this? Do you think there'll be even more to celebrate here from Samus?
I can't see them doing too much more. I wouldn't be surprised to see some remakes or re-releases of older games, especially as I think one of the really interesting things that the producer Sakamoto said in the Treehouse is designed as the end of the Metroid story in the 2D Metroid games. So it is a direct sequel to the 2D games we know. And he said you're meant to go through this game trying to work out why this is the end of that story. And so I could see them, you know, I could see them giving us a sort of re-releases that act as a run-up to the story of this game, mm-hmm. maybe something along those lines. But they also said there is a prologue you can watch if you've never played any of them and get up to speed with that story. That's super interesting. And it ties into another little detail they said in the Treehouse as well, which is that whereas most Metroid games are about starting on the surface of a planet and working your way down into the core, this starts you in the core and has you trying to get out to get to the surface, which is not right. just like a really good horror story, like The Descent or something. This is, it also feels like, is this the end of her career? You know, is this Samus's bounty hunting career? Is she trying to get out and retire, like fly right. off and just not come back to these horrible planets full of brain children? Like, tough to know where they're going with that stuff.
Samus Retired sounds like a Metroid game title.
Yeah, it really does.
You know, I really like the idea of a prologue. What if only there was another way to catch up Metroid fans on the classic Metroid games on Switch. God, it, like, sort of collection or ports, literally anything. I mean, like, there are so many. This is a, you know, a sequel to Fusion. Metroid Prime Zero Mission is an awesome, awesome remake of the original.
Of the first one.
Mm-hmm. Of the first one, yeah. Samus Returns is a remake of the Game Boy one. These would be great games to put on Switch. I just really, really hope we get to see those things. Zach, 15 years in the making for this game. It's got some stealth elements this time around too, but I'm also seeing like lots, it seems like some new moves. How do you feel about the sort of like fusion between, no pun intended, kind of classic run and gun Metroid style and some of the more sort of overt, like kind of almost like Ninja Gaiden-esque combo kills that we're seeing in this game?
Yeah, I really love how fluid the
like the idea that you have a tracking shot, the tracking shot from Samus Returns, but now you can do that while you're in motion. You can slide. Counterattack is back from Samus Returns. There's a lot of cool things. Honestly, like watching it, it looks like the kind of game to me that you're gonna want to watch speedruns of. You're gonna want to watch like pro players playing it on Twitch, because like when folks are really in the groove, I bet this game looks fantastic in motion, like all the kinds of stuff that you can pull off. And and I'm hearing that my mic is really terrible, so I'm sorry about that. I don't know what's happening there, but
it's okay. Zach is getting a transmission from the mothership. And
that's right.
Being beamed up to Zeeb so he can fight some wretched creatures. Casey, quick question for you. Did you pre-order the amiibo?
I did not. I was unable to pre-order the amiibo. I was able to pre-order that Zelda game and watch that.
That's good. Me too.
Yeah, the amiibo and the special edition of Metroid Dread is sold out. Sorry.
Keep refreshing. Follow IGN Deals on Twitter. Hopefully those will get restocked and we'll get your back. But we do have to take a quick break. We have lots more Nintendo to talk about. But first, IGN Summer of Gaming is presented by The Tomorrow War, available exclusively on Prime Video, July 2nd, starring Chris Pratt and J.K. Simmons. So the time has come for us to take a look at the latest trailer from Tomorrow War. Welcome back to IGN's E3 2021 Nintendo Direct post-show. We saw the Treehouse, the Direct. E3 has been going on for a while, so it might sound like I'm stringing my words together, but there's actually even more E3 to come, because in just a few minutes, the Bandai Namco Showcase kicks off. And then on Thursday, join us again for the Xbox Extended Game Showcase and the Podcast Unlocked post-show. If you missed any of this, literally any of it, you can catch up on all of it on IGN.com, on IGN's YouTube channel, across social media, even on your smart TVs, and you'll find even more content on E3's online portal, featuring articles, videos, and more. We've got news, previews, trailers, gameplay breakdowns, interviews, surprises. There's so much E3. Here to say more about E3 and Nintendo specifically are my bestest friends, Casey, Zach, Joe. Hey, what's up, everyone?
It's so nice of you, Brian, to call us your bestest friends.
Well, just for now, that might change at any given moment, because and it's called WarioWare Get It Together, and it has co-op. I'm so happy this game is returning. Casey, let's start with you. WarioWare.
Man.
How do you feel about it?
I love WarioWare. I might have very fond memories about playing this on the DS in class. Totally. Shouldn't be this excited about it, but Ninevolt is the character whose mini games, or micro games as we say, are all based off classic Nintendo games. And I saw in the back as they're scrolling through Claude from, so we're gonna have a tea party micro game, and that's all I need.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
This year, I decided I actually wanted to like follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals. So I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television. The Boston Bruins home opener, I went to watch it and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston, but whatever. Had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN, and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with like Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea, and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want. I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN, it's going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices, because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else. Unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, sold. I noticed that they did a micro game based on like with the brand new Animal Crossing graphics.
Yeah. Where
you know, so I guess maybe 9V's inclusion is less about classic games. Yeah, we can't just there's a mini game where you can tweeze chest hair off of a man statue, which is just amazing.
Get it together, Brian.
Get it together. Joe, this is out September 10th. I feel like that's a good time for this game, right? Like, it's not competing against a ton of stuff. It's also $50. Are you excited about the return of WarioWare as much as I am?
100%. Like, so I played a lot of the one on GBA. Yep. To the point where I left it out in the sun, the battery started leaking acid, and I would continue to play that game. It's just one of my favorite Nintendo series, and I thought it was a really good marker of this show in particular. Like, they seem to be showing some love to series that we haven't seen for a long time, like WarioWare. Mm-hmm. We're going to get on to Advance Wars. Like, some of these kind of classic, for want of a better term, B-tier franchises from Nintendo are getting another push, and I'm so excited to see this, and not like a Game and Wario Wii U take on this, like a real new micro game WarioWare game. I couldn't be happier that this is coming.
Zach, you and I did a small show together called Link Together. We played Breath of the Wild co-op style. This game has dedicated co-op. Should we do it? Should we play it together?
I'm going to say no, because I value our friendship. And I think like the idea of trying to play these these mini games, micro games, across one controller, let alone like the co-op of it, would be so infuriating. But fun. Like, I love WarioWare so much. I'm so glad that there's a new one for Switch. I think a lot of us have been asking for WarioWare to come back or at least make its way to the Switch for a long time. Mm-hmm. So it's awesome that it's finally here and it's coming so soon. September is, you know, only a couple months away at this point, and I completely agree with Joe. This whole showcase was really amazing for showing off some of the franchises that are maybe like lesser known or lesser beloved. You know, I see a lot of people tweeting about how like, hey, this presentation, cliche as it is, it really did have a little bit of something for everyone. You know, like, there is, if you love a Nintendo franchise, there's something here for you. And like, this one specifically spoke to me because I freaking love WarioWare, man.
I wanted to talk about another franchise we saw return today. Advance Wars is coming back. Mm-hmm. Reboot Camp is out December 3rd. It's a remake of the first 2 games. We just found out that that's being done by WayForward, who are immensely mm-hmm. talented and been doing awesome stuff with and for Nintendo for a very long time now. Advance Wars Reboot Camp is basically the first 2 GBA games with a brand new art style. How are we feeling about this one? Zach, I'll start with you.
So freaking pumped. I love Advance Wars. Advance Wars, if, you know, longtime NVC listeners and fans will know that Advance Wars and Fire, Advance Wars and F-Zero are the two franchises that Pear and I are constantly going back and forth about. Like, where's Advance Wars? Where's F-Zero? Has Nintendo completely forgotten about these? So it's so awesome to see these, even just remakes, reimaginings of the original ones, because it at least gives us an idea that, like, Nintendo still has these around, like they still are thinking about these franchises. And honestly, these first two games are phenomenal, and this is a great opportunity to reintroduce this franchise to a whole new generation of gamers, a whole new generation of potential fans. I think the big thing here is this art style. You know, like, I'm seeing a lot of chatter about, you know, the pixel art was perfect, that people not particularly loving the way that this looks. I'm fine with it. I think it looks awesome. I love the toyetic design. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Link's Awakening remake. So, like, I'm super into this, and I can't wait. You know, it's tough because this year I made a resolution. I said I was not going to replay any games that I've previously played. I was only going to focus on, you know, playing new games, but I'll definitely make an exception for these two games because these are bangers.
One last thing I wanted to talk about was Tekken and Smash Brothers together at last. Kazuya has been added to the roster. He killed Kirby. Ganon was murdered. There was a lot going on there. The one of the two Smash Brothers drops we're going to get for characters were at the very tail end of that very long, long game development cycle. Smash Brothers is almost done. Casey, real quick, are you excited for this one?
I liked the art. And also, Kirby did not get killed because Kirby is indestructible. He's the final survivor in the original Ultimate trailer, and he survived and got away scot-free from Kazuya as well.
All right.
It's up to him to save everyone from Kazuya.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have all survived throwing off the cliff that is E3, but there's just a little bit left. I want to thank my Nintendo friends here, or my Super Ninfriendos, for rocking with us. Coming up next, we have the Bandai Namco E3 presentation, so let's see what else the studio behind Dark Souls, Elden Ring, and Boruto have in store for E3.
Just kidding, this is not the Bandai Namco presentation. Since this was recorded live, we unfortunately did not get a chance to talk about Mario Party Superstars, which will be reviving classic Nintendo 64 boards and minigames. It even supports saving mid-game when playing online. It's basically exactly what I wanted from a Mario Party. We also didn't get to mention an announcement we made on IGN's Summer of Gaming. Doki Doki Literature Club Plus is coming to the Nintendo Switch on June 30th, and its creator, Dan Salvato, will be guesting on Nintendo Voice Chat next week to talk about this cute, psychological experience. Don't be fooled, Doki Doki Literature Club is not for kids. I nominated it for Best PC Game in 2017, and it actually won the People's Choice Award for Best PC Game on IGN.com as well. Doki Doki Literature Club Plus includes even more content, and I'm really curious about how they'll change the mechanics to work on console. Also, quick reminder, a beefy demo for Monster Hunter Stories 2 Wings of Ruin will be available July 25th, and the save data will transfer to the full game. We'll talk so much more about E3 next week, but until then, keep listening for this fantastic interview with Tom Marks and Nintendo.
Welcome, everybody. Tom from IGN here with Bill and Nate from Nintendo Treehouse. Thank you so much for joining us, guys. We're going to talk about Nintendo's E3 Direct. This was a great packed show, obviously. Showed off a ton of stuff, a new WarioWare game, a new Smash Bros. Character. But I want to jump into that last one more thing, because I think it's the first thing everyone's going to want to talk about. It's the thing that the internet is ablaze discussing right now and speculating on, which is the sequel to Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. You guys showed off about a minute and a half trailer with some gameplay and some story beats and all that sort of stuff. Very exciting, but I wanted to dig in a little bit more into some of the stuff we saw, if we can. Specifically, I would be remiss not to ask this right away, because a lot of people are already discussing it. Age of Calamity was, which is also getting DLC as we learned today, had directly to do with time travel. There's a lot of stuff in both the Breath of the Wild trailers that we've seen now that have like this sort of backwards mute song sort of motif in the singing of the song. There was a couple shots of things reversing in with abilities that Link was now using. So what's going on here? Is this game linked to time stuff, time travel in some way? It seems to be what all of that is sort of indicating, at least. Bill, why don't we start with you?
All interesting observations. You know, it's amazing the degree to which people will analyze the trailers and look at sort of every frame and every little tidbit to see what they can glean out of it. Obviously, I think right now we're just really excited to be able to show off some new footage and show off some live gameplay from the game, or, you know, gameplay in the form of a trailer. So I think that's kind of the big news for us is just letting people dig into that and kind of guess what they can. And you'll get more information on some of those details as we get closer to when it launches in 2022.
Yeah, that's actually what I loved about this trailer was it gives us just enough questions to keep us talking for so much time. I was the same way as practically everybody who watched the trailer, which is, you know, how is he tunneling through rock? How did he move that spiky ball back up the hill? You know, and I feel like the anticipation of learning about that, especially given the entire world of the Breath of the Wild universe, is gonna it's gonna sustain me for quite a long time, and I hope it does for everybody else too.
Obviously, I assume you can't go into too much detail here, but we do see that sort of like Link's arm getting sort of corrupted or what have you, and then using abilities from that arm, including kind of like what looked like almost a new sort of flamethrower thing at one point, though that might have been from the other arm. It was a lot to go on, right? But that arm, people are picking out that actually was... There was some concept art with Link's arm looking that way from the original Breath of the Wild that was brought back or was shown in a behind the scenes a couple years ago. Is that a fair connection to draw for fans? Nate, why don't we go with you?
I think you can draw a lot of connections, and whether or not they turn out to be true is pretty much anybody's guess. I agree with you. I think that, I remember seeing that concept art when Mr. Fujibayashi showed it off. And I think that I imagine he's kicking around a ton of different ideas, some drawn from past inspiration, some new ones. And as far as, I feel like when I was watching that trailer, the whatever the item was that he was using with his left hand, that was maybe even a different hand. And so,
right.
You know, so it's like, I don't even know what are weapons and what are powers. For me, again, it comes back to almost more questions than answers right now. And I almost like that better than having answers, since I can't have the game in my hands right this second. So.
Well, I think I can speak for fans when there might be a lot of people, a little uncomfortable in the squirm with anticipation, right? Like with all those questions. One thing I did want to ask about, the sequel in general too, is there's a lot of comparisons you can draw, not about specifics, but about sort of what this game is at least shaping up to be. It seems almost like, does Nintendo see this as almost like a cousin to something like Majora's Mask? Because there's a lot of things to be drawn there, where Majora's Mask was a much darker game, right? It reused a lot of the same sort of, like, not just full-on reused, but, you know, reused a lot of the same technology, same assets, borrowed a lot of the stuff from Ocarina of Time in that regard to tell this new story. And that seems like where this sequel is going. Does Nintendo kind of view those games similarly, or are they akin to each other, Bill?
I mean, I would say it's an easy comparison or conclusion to jump to at this point in time, just given, you know, what's been shown so far and given the nature of it being a direct sequel. It's not often that there is a direct sequel to a Zelda game. And so I understand people making that conclusion. But at the same time, you know, and I don't want to kind of delve too much into it, but this is its own game. And I think that the way that it builds on Breath of the Wild, which already was such an expansive game with so many layers of Link's abilities and layers to the gameplay, I think this is going to layer quite a bit more into that. And I think that by the time you finish playing it, I think everybody's probably going to come to the conclusion that this is really sort of its own thing. And I think as we start to show a bit more of the game over the kind of the coming months to you know, the next year or so, I think it'll probably start to be a bit more apparent where this game kind of stands on its own and what makes it so unique.
We also got a release window for this sequel with 2022, which I believe is the first time we've gotten any sort of like actual date. There's been a lot of speculation on that for a long time, but nothing actually hard in that regard. But Aonuma did say that this is, you know, they're asking for a little bit more time, people for being patient. What went into, I'm curious, Nate, well, like what went into the reason this is taking as long as it is? Not that it's not saying, you know, like how is it taking this long, but like, like what kind of factors have gone into them looking for a little bit more time on this?
You know, nothing too dramatic here, really. It's the core Nintendo philosophy shared across teams, and certainly on the Zelda team, to release a game when it's ready. And you know, development is complicated. Obviously, it takes a long time. And you know, when it releases in 2022, it'll be basically a 5-year gap between the last game. Not completely out of the ordinary. And I think that you know, We've seen time and time again that letting our developers, you know, see their projects through on a timeline that brings a game out in really the state that they want it to be in is always worthwhile. As painful as it may be for us as fans to have to wait extra time, it almost always is worth it. So, you know, nothing. You wouldn't point to any really one thing as far as what has been taking up the extra development time. It's really an aggregate of just making the game that it should be. So let's just got to wait a little bit longer. I'm right there with everybody else. Trust me.
I think Nintendo has earned that patience in that regard a lot, as if past games are any indication, at least. And last question about Zelda for Bill. You know, I've had to dance around it a couple times. I've had to catch myself a couple times already of calling it the sequel to Breath of the Wild, right, rather than Breath of the Wild 2. So I guess just flat out, like, why are you holding back on the name? And also, are you guys upset when you hear Breath of the Wild 2 as people calling it that kind of colloquially?
Well, certainly not upset. I mean, that's, you know, that's going to be shorthand, and I think it's natural for people to want to find a shorthand way to frame it. We're still calling it the sequel to Breath of the Wild. I think, you know, as far as why we're holding back on the name, you'll just have to stay tuned because obviously, you know, Zelda names are kind of important, those subtitles, and they start to give little bits of hints about maybe what's going to happen. But you'll just have to stay tuned and look forward to when we finally do decide to reveal it.
Fair enough. Let's talk about the other kind of, what sticks out in my mind is the other major game announcement from this E3 Direct, which is Metroid Dread, which is a name that, unlike the Breath of the Wild sequel, which we haven't gotten yet, was a name we got almost 2 decades ago, seemingly. This is a name that I think is infamous now on the internet, or you know, it's been around forever in rumor and myth and legend and whispers around, you know, schoolyards, that sort of thing. How much connection does this Metroid Dread have to kind of all of that lore and those rumors and those going back to, I think it's 2005 was the earliest mention of this game, at least in rumor.
The
Nate, please.
Oh yeah, sure. I'll jump in. I think that the core of the game dates back to exactly what you're talking about. You know, really, in the interview with Mr. Sakamoto, he made it clear that he had really this central idea of a, well, dread. You know, this relentless threat that's stalking Samus, and the gameplay that would grow out of that conceit. Had it in his head way back when, and it was something that just he couldn't bring to fruition because it didn't have sort of the, first of all, the tech to realize what his vision was for it. And then the secondary component to it was finding a development partner, which he has found in Mercury Steam. In working with them on Metroid Samus Returns, really, he realized that they just get the franchise. They understand Metroid gameplay. They understand what makes it so good and so unique. And that combined with the power of the Nintendo Switch, it was time to bring it back.
And it is more than just, it's a 16-year wait and more than just rumor, right? Because this is a direct sequel to Metroid Fusion and is now, y'all are calling it the end of Samus's saga in this sort of like initial 2D Metroid game series. Bill, what does that actually like mean in terms of like the end of Samus's story here? Because obviously that doesn't mean the end of Samus and, you know, Metroid Prime 4, as you mentioned, is still in development.
Yeah, well, and obviously, you know, there's we've got the 2D Metroid series. The Metroid Prime series is its own series that's kind of distinct from the core 2D Metroid storyline. Metroid Dread is going to it serves as sort of the closing of the curtain on the current five game story arc that started with Metroid. Of course, it doesn't mean it's the end of the 2D series, and it doesn't mean it's the end of Samus's adventures, but it does kind of serve as a break point in that story arc. And personally, I think, you know, I'm excited for it. I'm excited for the story that Sakamoto-san has to tell. And I think everybody's going to feel that not only is this an important point in the storyline, but it's also, I think, almost Samus at really kind of her most powerful, and just the fluidity of motion that you see with some of her new abilities in this game, really is going to feel like the pinnacle of Metroid that we've seen up until now.
And speaking of this being the right moment for Metroid Dread to finally come out, obviously the Dread subtitle is, you know, we got a glimpse of the Emmys kind of chasing Samus and this very tense sort of unkillable enemy that you have to run and hide from within this game. This does also feel like a good moment for this game to come out because the sort of survival horror genre, not that this game is outright horror, but is that sort of genre is on the rise right now, where we had Alien Isolation in past years. We've had the rise of Resident Evil 2's remake with Mr. X coming back. Like I get kind of whiffs of all of these things when I look at Dread. And Nate, I was wondering, is that fair? Were these games like Alien Isolation or Resident Evil, were those inspirations for what Dread has become?
You know, I would say that I feel more like the inspiration came directly from Metroid Fusion and the SAX. Because to me, anyways, as a Metroid fan, the Emmy encounters are very evocative of that feeling of powerlessness that you had when you started running into the SAX. You know, this the music would cut out, you'd hear footsteps, and all of a sudden you're just like, I'm dead, I have to get out of here. So, you know, that, and I, that obviously is a game from quite a long time ago. So I'm with you, though, in the sense that the, not necessarily survival horror, but the idea of survival in general, of being powerless for a certain period of time and then coming back with power is something that is very exciting from a gameplay perspective. It certainly is peaks and valleys. I can tell you from experience that playing this game and running through, you know, just the depths of this of Planet ZDR, you know, you're trying to survive, of course, and you're fighting all kinds of life forms. It feels very different the second you step into one of these patrol zones where the Emmys are, and all of a sudden your entire gameplay changes, and my palms start sweating, and I want to get out of there. and as if from a gameplay loop perspective, that is just hugely satisfying because you're just going through these emotional ups and downs, and you know, feeling palpable relief leaving one of these zones, but then knowing that eventually you got to go back in there eventually and kill this thing it just makes for a great gameplay loop, and I can't wait for people to experience it.
Yeah, it's very cool to see.
In fact, once you've played the game and you watch someone else play, all of those emotions come right back to you when you're just sitting there watching. I've sat down and watched Nate play, and it's like I can feel my own heart throbbing at moments where the Emmy is closing in on him. And I'm just like this. It's like my heart rate's going up already thinking about it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, and it's a good point, too, that this is kind of, I feel like this always has been sort of in the DNA of Metroid to some extent, and it's cool to see that now modernized and new and fresh with Mercury Steam at the wheel. Thank you so much both to Bill and Nate for talking to me. It was an absolute pleasure. It was a very exciting E3 showcase, and we can't wait to see more of Breath of the Wild, Not 2, and Metroid Dread, and you know, Tekken and Smash, WarioWare. You got a lot going on this year, so thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you.
Don't forget Advance Wars. Got to touch on Advance Wars. It's one of my favorite series, so thanks for having us.
That's a wrap for this Frankenstein's Monster of an NVC for Nintendo's E3. Thank you so much for listening, and write in your Nintendo E3-related questions for us to answer next week to nbc@ign.com. And don't miss next week's episode with the creator of Doki Doki Literature Club Plus, Dan Salvato. Plus, we'll probably be talking about Mario Golf Super Rush. And remember, Nintendo Voice Chat is the only place you can get the thing. There's no one here to say it.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to Season 1, we are thrilled to announce the launch of Season 2. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make Season 2 even more memorable together.